Focus with Jessica Strutt on ABC Radio Perth.
I was recently at Karajini National Park in the Pilbara. It's a spectacularly beautiful spot, and if you haven't been, I highly recommend it. There's something really therapeutic about being out of phone range, on the red dirt, and at one with nature. Exploring all those gorges with those beautiful waterfalls. And of course, the babbling streams. But when you're in the middle of nowhere, in WA's great outdoors, you know, things don't always go to plan, do they? In fact, things can go horribly wrong. Thankfully, that didn't happen for me, but it did for my colleague Belinda Varaschetti's husband, Bruce, during his visit to Karajini last week. Here's how it all unfolded.
Got to Karajini about 4 PM and set up camp, and we raced down to Joffrey Gorge and thought it was awesome, had a swim and everything. Went back to the tent and we had dinner and settled in for the night. And about midnight, the wind got up a bit and was flapping a bit of the camping gear around, and the old man there just had to do a pee as well. So, it was pitch black. I didn't have a torch with me at the time, and I took a couple of steps outside the tent. And felt a really sharp pain at the just below my ankle on the right foot. Realised I was being bitten by something. So I was sort of hopping around and dancing and freaking out. I didn't see what it was at the time. It was dark, so the pain just continued to increase at the site, and obviously I was a bit concerned, so I quickly found a torch, looked down and saw a couple of puncture marks and blood coming out of one, and I thought, oh, this is interesting. Being bitten by a snake, and I'm about an hour from the nearest hospital and in a national park, and yeah, so that was a real shock to the system, a bit of a wake-up. It was about 20 past 12, and ironically, that afternoon, I was talking to the kids about what to do if you get bitten by a snake. So then I went and completely ignored all the advice that I'd given them, which is to stay completely still and not move, and obviously to wrap the site in a compression bandage. So what I thought I'd do, because of the remoteness of the area, was I thought I'd risk a short drive to the manager's hut to see if I could raise them. I suppose I was overwhelmed by a bit of... I'm so far from everywhere. I need to get some attention quickly. And the pain was fairly intense, I must say. So that was spurring me on a bit. I couldn't raise the manager, but I, by that time I realised I just needed to get back to the tent and sit still and ring 000, which is what I did. So all in all, I probably took about 50 or 60 steps along with the driving, and then just sat down back at the tent. Wrapped myself up, rang 000, and they were fantastic. They talked me through everything and reassured me that there was a first responder based at the Karajini Eco Resort, which was Catherine, the manager. And from there, it was a bit of a wait for the ambos from Tom Price to get together, because about 55-minute drive for them to get to the site. You know, I suppose the hardest bit was the sitting still and waiting and wondering what was going to happen. That was the big question mark, because, you know, having never been bitten by a snake before, I thought, you know, you don't know what exactly happens, and a lot of things go through your mind. And, I had a couple of kids with me, my children, Miranda and William, and we're probably getting a little bit tense, maybe a little bit emotional, but nothing out of hand. The ambos from Tom Price got to us, and they radioed through and organised with the hospital at Tom Price to get someone ready for a video link to Perth. How it played out was that I was hooked up with an RFDS flight from Parabadu. Got on the plane. We went via Roy Hill to pick up a mine worker who'd had a heart episode. And I must say, the guys on the flight were fantastic. You know, they were reassuring. There was two doctors on the flight. They were making jokes of my city slicker wearing thongs and walking around outside the tent without a torch. They helped me with the pain. The pain got fairly intense, I must say. I had needed a bit of oxycodone to get me through the 12 hours. So they were happy to help with the medication, which was pretty handy. But at every stage, they were monitoring and just letting me know that what was happening and what was likely to happen. I felt incredibly safe and really well looked after. And I tell you what a great service. I mean, the guys are just faultless. That were, you know, everything they did was it just made you feel like you were safe and being cared for by experts, which is you know, hats off to them. They do a great job. You plan your trip and you think that everything's going to go okay, and you know, we thought we were doing it tough because we had a tyre blowout and we lost a petrol cap on the way up, and it was like, oh god, it's terrible. What else can go wrong? And then suddenly, like, you know, like something like this happens, and it really puts everything into perspective. So just knowing that these guys are around and they're ready to pick you up at you know, beck and call for an emergency, it's just such a great thing. It's such a part of the Australian outback too. I feel like I've done the complete outback adventure now, Russell Coit style, I suppose.
First thing, do not panic, okay? Remain calm. If you panic, it causes a heart to beat and causes the venom to go around the body.
Bruce Christie there sharing his story. Now, that's just one of hundreds of critical care emergency situations the Royal Flying Doctor Service will respond to this year alone, and that's across our enormous state. Let's find out what that job is like. Rebecca Tomkinson, the Royal Flying Doctor Service WA CEO, Albie Unger, the chief pilot for the service, and Dr. Andrew Hooper, the head of medical, are going to run through all of the things that they do here in our huge state. Rebecca, let's start with, how familiar is a story like Bruce's?
Well, last week we actually had 4 snake bites and a camel bite. We transferred more than 160 patients in the first week of the school holidays. We do a little over 20 flights a day across all 2.5 million square kilometres of WA. And we do that at 5 different bases, right up there in Broome, out there in Meekatharra, Port Hedland, Kalgoorlie, and at our base here in Jandakot.
All right, and okay, a camel bite, that's a whole nother show on its own.
It's a whole nother show on its own.
Is that a rarity, or is this a...
Look, you'd be surprised at some of the interesting situations that happen to people when you least expect it. But what's great to know is we're there to help out no matter what it is.
Right, so I think many city slickers, if they're like me, might be thinking, oh, well, you know, the Royal Flying Doctor Service, it's predominantly a service for those who live out in the regions. How much of a misconception is that?
Look, it's a great misconception because we're there for all West Australians. Actually, anyone who's living, travelling or working in regional Western Australia. And you'd be very surprised at, it's like anything when you're out having an average day, when something happens, you know, you're out at the playground and you might fall differently. Lots of parents out there during school holidays will know that, you know, the least unexpected piece happens when you are least prepared for that. But what we do is we're there to take that extra bit of care, and we're there in all of those tricky places just to ensure that we're able to support everyone living, working and travelling throughout WA.
I'm assuming quite often it would be the city slickers that are the ones that get themselves in trouble because they may be a little more underprepared than...
Just a tiny bit, and it's great for the crews to have the odd story to be able to tell that, like you say, thongs in the Carrageenie are not a great way to start the holiday, but I'm sure all your listeners will know now that high socks and sneaks is a good start, especially when going to the bathroom.
And a torch can be handy.
Uh-huh.
A torch can be handy. You're with Jess Stroud on the Focus program. I want to bring you in here, Dr. Andy Hooper, Head of Medicine with the Royal Flying Doctor's Service. Now, most of us would agree, as I said, that being a doctor or a nurse is rewarding but difficult, and, you know, those life and death consequences. But your staff have this additional level of complexity because you're working largely from the small space in a plane. How fair is it to refer to it as working from, I suppose, an emergency room in the sky?
Thanks, Jess. Look, completely fair. It is an emergency room in the sky, but it's more than that. It's an intensive care unit in the air. We try and do everything we can for our patients that you can get in a major hospital. We just cram it all into something the size of a telephone box.
So what are some of the implications and challenges of working in a smaller space compared to, you know, working in an emergency department or an intensive care unit in a city hospital?
Well, look, there's a lot of great things. You're up at 25,000 feet. You've got the best office view in the world out of the window, and you've got no one else telling you what to do. But it is a challenge. You're right. Like you said, they're trying to do everything in a very small area. We're in remote locations. We have limited equipment and drugs on board. And we're strapped down. The patient's strapped down. And there's no bathroom.
All right. Now, I've got a very important question here from Jack, who says, a camel bite doesn't sound very serious. Is Jack wrong? Or can Jack be wrong?
Look,
it depends where you're bitten. I reckon it could be pretty serious, Jack. I think there's a few places I prefer not to be bitten by a camel.
Yeah, look, I reckon so. We've flown people who've been bitten by everything. I've met people who've been bitten by emus, crocodiles, sharks, jellyfish, anything you can think of, snakes, spiders. Pretty much anything that's out there in Australia bites people, and we help them out when they need it.
So, Andy, how similar are the tools you have to work with in the plane compared to a regular hospital? I mean, in a sense, what have you done to bring 21st century medical equipment to your planes?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Jets?
Yeah. Look, we've been working for years, for decades, in continually enhancing the services we've got in our aircraft. So we've got a lot of specialist equipment. A lot of your listeners might not know, but we have hospital-level monitors, we have defibrillators, we have ventilators, life support machines, we can take ultrasound on our aircraft. We've got all the equipment we need to manage really critical care emergency presentations, the same as you would in a hospital. We're just doing it with one or two people, as I said, in the back of a really small aircraft.
I heard it described by someone in your service, you know, you've got extreme sport. And really what you guys are practicing is extreme medicine in a sense. Can you explain what does that involve, and is it particularly alluring for you medical staff who work with Royal Flying Doctor Service?
Yeah, look, I think it is for our medical staff, for our doctors, and for all our highly trained flight nurses as well. Look, WA is extreme, as Rebecca said earlier. It's enormous. It's 2.5 million square kilometres. It's a third of the Australian landmass, the biggest health jurisdiction in the world, full stop. So nobody else does what we do. And so the ability to come and work for RFDS and do something which is just unique in the world is remarkable. So distance, we've said, is a huge issue. But there's a lot of other extremes we deal with. We deal with extremes of patients who are just a few hours old right up to the very end of their life. So that whole range of ages and a whole range of medical conditions, people with trauma, preterm labour, people who have had heart attacks, breathing problems, everything you can think of you might meet on a single day. And we don't know when we come to work in the morning where we're going to go. We don't know what we're going to see, but we know we're going to make a difference. And that's the really important thing.
So that must be hugely alluring, I suppose, for the staff who work there. That never know what any day is going to be like.
Absolutely. I go to work in the morning and I've no idea where I'll be at lunchtime.
And Ida's been speaking about those Australian larrikins, and I have the great privilege of leading an amazing team, and there are many larrikins and some fabulous characters out there working for us and also supporting the services we do, from our first responders at St John Ambulance all the way through to some of those medical teams in regional hospitals. It still quintessentially represents what it means to be Australian, that sense of a mate's going to be there on that day when you need them most. And, you know, I love to talk about John Flynn didn't send a Band-Aid. I mean, he sent a plane, you know, to the most remote places when planes were in their infancy, and it's still extraordinary today to see what those planes can do.
Might be time to get rid of the Australian of the Year award and replace it with Larrikin of the Year award. Let's go to Chris. He might be a Larrikin. I don't know. He's originally from Kununurra, and he might have a story to share with us, I reckon. Good day, Chris.
Good morning. I'd just really like to thank the RFDS and probably the NT Airbag Service, because over the years, when I lived in Kununurra, I've used them, or my family have used them, 5 times. I've used them 4, and my son once.
Wow.
And it's not, my friends reckon I've got frequent flyer points with them. I've got a heart problem, and they've provided excellent service for me. You know, I may not be here today if it wasn't for them. And I, you know, I heartily give them my thanks.
Chris, thanks for that. And so were all of the times, if you don't mind me asking, for the heart condition for yourself, or there weren't any croc bites in there or anything else if you're out in Kununurra?
The only thing that probably was a bit heart related was that I cracked my head on a fishing trip in Coral Bay. And
as you do. Probably wearing your flip-flops, were you? Wearing your thongs and you slipped on a slippery rock or something, were you?
Yeah. and because I've got blood thinners, they had to fly me out to make sure I wasn't bleeding in other places. So, yeah, no, I sort of would like to thank them very much.
As Rebecca said at the start, you've got different bases. You've obviously got your big one in Jandakot, then you've got a number around Broome, Meekatharra, Kalgoorlie. What happens, talk us through what happens when, for example, someone does get that snake bite out there in Carrageenie. Where's it all coordinated from?
Yeah, hi there, Jess. Look, it's all coordinated through our statewide coordination centre in Jandakot. So we've got a 1800 free phone number, and when people get injured, they give us a call. And they get put through to one of our expert logistics coordinators who just need to know a bit of basic information, who they are, where they are, what's happened. But what we want to do is get patients put through as quickly as possible to one of our really highly skilled doctors. So as soon as a coordinator's got that information, they're put through to one of our doctors, and that's where our care really starts. We can give medical advice, we can work out what needs to be done, we can work out what health services are available for the patient, and if they need an evacuation, then we can start getting that planned and get out to them as soon as possible.
And Bruce picks up on that, Jessica, where we were actually diverted to come in and pick him up. So that's an interesting part of our role, and I like to remind our friends at Qantas and Virgin that we don't get to schedule our flights. We actually need to just take off on demand, and often our pilots are diverted actually in flight, and our doctors will talk through who else we can put on board the plane. So if we're someone close by, like Bruce was, we pop down and we pick them up as well.
Albie Young, you're the chief pilot with the Royal Flying Doctor Service. You keep all the other pilots in line. First of all, how many aircraft have you got?
Well, we've got a fleet of 16 PC-12 aircraft and two Rio Tinto Life Flight jets, which were introduced in January this year.
Okay, and they're sponsored by Rio Tinto, obviously.
Correct, yes, they are.
And so what's so special about those jets compared to what you were working with before, even though I know they're still part of the fleet, but what's so special about the jets?
Well, it's a bit like medical, like Andy mentioned, keeping up with new technology and advances in aviation. So these are brand new aircraft, not only to us, but to the world. So we were one of the launch customers for these aircraft, and their dedicated aeromedical fit out was incorporated with our medical teams as well to try and make it the best it could possibly be for our type of work that we do. Again, the distances that we have to cover in WA are vast, and these jets can obviously get there quicker, and we can get medical attention to these people very, very quickly now.
All right. So who makes the call? Like, I mean, most of us, we only have one car unless we're very wealthy. Who makes the call? You know, do you walk out and go, which plane or jet will I take today? Who makes the call about which one's going to go up?
Again, our coordination centre, who the call comes into initially. Once they go through the initial consult, then they'll then go back to the operations team, and then they'll then decide the best resources which are available at the time and which aircraft will be allocated to go and collect the patient, or patients, as it might be.
Let's go to one more call. Robin, what did you want to share? You've got a story?
Yeah. Yes, I owe the RFDS a big debt of gratitude, which I think about every day, because my first two babies... we were in Broome at the time, and I needed them on both occasions. With the first one taking me to Derby Hospital after a very, very long labour, just managed to get there, and ever so accommodating through thunderstorms and the like. And the second one to Darwin, which was as a result of a hemorrhage and a premature baby. But amazing people, amazing service, ever accommodating, and wonderful, wonderful.
And so for you, does it give you that sort of a peace of mind knowing that it sometimes is difficult living in regional areas? We all know that you don't always have the services that we city slickers get, but it gives you a sense of peace of mind sometimes when you're living in those regions to know that they're out there?
Truthfully, I didn't even think about this some time ago, some odd 30 years ago now. So you can imagine the conditions that they were working in even then. But they're just amazing. They just...
Robin, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate that. I want to know, how does the job of being a pilot for Royal Flying Doctors compare to, you know, other pilot jobs?
It's pretty much the same as with the medical teams, as Andy alluded to before. It's the variety of work that we do. I mean, the guys come in to work and they really don't know what's going to happen that day. It's not like doing the regular Qantas Virgin stuff. You're just taking tourists to Bali and back and over to the East Coast, which is all scheduled. These guys are waiting to go. So they get the call, they get the aircraft prepared, and essentially they do pretty much all of it when they're told to go and evacuate somebody.
Do you get any special allowances for your aircraft that perhaps other aircraft operators might not get?
As you probably understand, aviation is highly regulated in Australia. So there are a lot of rules and regulations which people got to abide by, particularly pilots and operators. So we sort of have a little bit of a scope in that, which gives us a bit of grey area, which we can activate, which is known as a mercy flight. So if we have people which got life-threatening conditions or are going to be permanently disabled, we can then assess that risk and we can sort of bend the rules slightly in certain areas so we can get them medical help with aviation aircraft.
Can you give an example of what that would look like?
Landing on roads is a perfect example of that. Landing on unconditioned strips that aren't prepared to what they should be, because you can't land on a road.
We had a patient that we were taking out of the southwest who had some heart challenges, and we had to declare a mercy flight because our doctor, the patient's blood pressure was dropping very, very dangerously low. So they stood up to actually pump the plasma through the patient's heart. And in order to land the plane, of course, everyone has to be seated. So the pilot called a mercy flight to allow the doctor to continue to pump that plasma for that patient.
Does the job attract a certain kind of person, Rebecca?
There's just some amazing people in our team, and I get to meet some extraordinary characters, and actually we've got one of them here today having a bit of a chat to us. I travelled in one Saturday. We were all getting ready to take the new Rio Tinto Life Flight PC-24 on a demonstration piece, and I walked into the foyer and standing there is Dr. Hooper in a Top Gun t-shirt, and can I say, he looks a little bit mild-mannered and super polite, but that was a big introduction to what we're about to do that day. Very cool.
Right, hey, is that right? I bet he turns a bit of that up in the office.
He does turn a bit of that up in the office.
Fancies himself as a bit of a flyboy, hey? Okay, well, we might have a little treat for him later on then, for you, Dr. Andy.
Yes.
We've talked about some of the things you love about working in this environment, Andy, but I'm wondering, is there, a certain job that stands out for you?
Geez, there's a lot. I've been with RFTS for over 10 years now. I've lost track of the number of patients I've
With an accent like that, how on earth did you end up doing that?
It's a question I ask myself sort of on a daily basis. So, yeah, you picked up. I'm a Yorkshireman originally. So my introduction to RFTS was the TV program. It was watching Neighbours, all the really sort of, accurate high-level stuff about Australia. But, yeah, I came here for 6 months back in 2000. I'm still here. I don't know if you know, with RFDS, we train doctors as well. So specialist doctors trained to be anaesthetists, emergency physicians, can come and spend time with us during their training to really broaden their skills as a doc. So I did that job 10 years ago, and I never left.
You were talking, it must be amazing then to do that. You were talking before about the traits, Rebecca, and you made a joke. Does it take a sense of humour? Does it take a bit of difference to be doing something like this?
Oh, absolutely. It really does take an extraordinary sense of service above self. All of our pilots, our flight nurses, our engineers, our doctors go above and beyond every single day. We're never quite sure what we're going to find. And certainly, for all of our amazing training, our flight nurses and doctors need to understand how they can work at altitude. So, Jess, I learned the hard way that apparently the body, it processes alcohol at altitude in a different way. And that's quite impactful. And it's the same with medicine. So all of our clinicians train in regular hospital environments, and then they need to train again to do that at altitude in a very confined space under extraordinary pressure. And they have a sense of humour, as Bruce experienced. So thongs, mate, in the outback, in the dark with no torch. How did that pan out for you? And having that sense of humour is really important, because often we have to deal with life-threatening circumstances, and sometimes, yes, those stories aren't always positive, but, we bring the best we can every day.
What about for you, Albie? Is there a particular job over all of these years that stands out to you?
There sure is. How much time have we got?
Well, left just over 20 minutes here, but let's take a bit of time off that because I've got to play a Top Gun song, obviously. But, yeah, you far away.
Okay. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time as well, and, again, exactly the same as what Andy's mentioned. It's a particular type of job. I've been doing aviation for 35 years. I've seen just about everything, so I've got quite a bit of experience. But this job really is a job that you do for the reasons that we do what we do, I suppose, if it makes sense. I do remember one particular night when I was on call many years ago. The call came in. They were having a jamboree up in the middle of the state somewhere where their strip wasn't particularly well maintained, which is another reminder to station owners about keeping their strip updated.
Bit of corrugation.
Yeah, yes. So anyway, they were having a pretty good party, roo shooting, rodeos, all that sort of stuff, and a gentleman fell off the back of a ute and had pretty severe spinal injuries, and they couldn't move him for obvious reasons. And, of course, the only way to the closest strip was about over 50 kilometres on a very bad corrugated country road, which wasn't obviously optimal as well. So the guys out there, they managed to get a grader. They managed to get the strip graded up. There was no lights there. It was the middle of the morning. So they got all the utes and their four-wheel drives and lined them up on the edge of the strip to light up the strip for us. And, of course, that required a mercy flight as well because that's not what normal aircraft and pilots go and do. So we went out there and we had to go and get the medical team out to the location because they didn't move him to make sure that he was okay. And, of course, in all the kerfuffle running backwards and forwards and everything like that, the guy that was doing all this had a heart attack. Yeah. So not only did we have the spinal patient to take care of, we had the gentleman who was doing all this with a heart attack as well. So we had to take him out at the same time.
What a crazy story.
Yeah.
And both okay?
Both okay, yep.
I mean, that also says something about that sense of, you know, people's ability to think on the spot. And is that part of it? You were talking before about the sense of community, quintessentially Australian.
It is that real adventure, that quick wit, that response time. You know, there's the post and wire coming together. There's, you know, using utes in all sorts of ways that they were never intended to be used for. There's, you know, also, you know, I love to share that if it's not on board the plane, then the doctors and the nurses need to find a way to improvise to fix it. So it's just amazing what they can do with the equipment that they have and how they respond to the circumstances they find themselves in.
Obviously, the medical emergencies where you're flying, but you do a lot of other work as well across the state. Do you want to touch on that for us as well?
Yeah, we do a lot of primary health work as well with regional communities. We're often the only medical service that's going out into very remote areas. I had the privilege of travelling out to the Yakinara community out in the Fitzroy Valley and, you know, I'm first week in my role and it's just crazy exciting and I'm watching all of these things get loaded onto the plane and I say to my team, what's with all the luggage? And they very pan look at me saying, that's actually the pharmacy, Rebecca, because what needs to happen, of course, is there isn't the same pieces. Like if I go to the GP, I usually just pop next door to the chemist. Well, the chemist isn't next door and we need to take all the tools and equipment and think through some of the drugs and medication that might be needed. And often we need to be able to leave that in place for more than a week, which is when we'll next visit. So the service is incredibly extensive right the way through from that first responder piece in our medical chests all the way through to primary healthcare. And of course, that emergency retrieval that is a critical time-saving, life-saving service.
Now, Andy, one of the things you said you liked about the job is that you don't have someone, I suppose, breathing down your neck and bossing. You know, it's always hard, isn't it? Especially in intense.
I was surprised at that comment.
I've got to be a little bit careful here, but yeah.
But I get what you mean. I mean, if you're in an emergency setting in a hospital, there would be numerous people with you. When you're a doctor working alone, you know, what support do you have when you are up in the air? Is there any way of communicating back?
Yeah, look, absolutely there is, and it's a really important part of our service. So with doctors, we've always got one of our flight nurses with us, and our flight nurses are, like nurses across Australia, are incredible. And all of our flight nurses, they're critical care trained, and they're midwives as well. But outside of that, all our aircraft have got sat phones on. We can call back to our coordination centre, speak to a senior doctor there. Anyone can call me any time of day or night, and they often do. And, of course, we can call to specialists in hospitals to get advice, but also just to give updates and make sure the hospital is ready and prepared for what we're bringing them to make sure that patient gets the best outcome all the way through.
You've both talked about long service histories with the Royal Flying Doctor Service. Is it a hard thing to leave because the adrenaline rush just must be amazing in both jobs, Albie?
Sure is, yeah. I mean, again, in my role, there is a lot of administrative and management stuff going on, so that gets me stuck behind
a desk. As the head pilot, yeah. Of course.
And to me, I love still to get out and go flying. And I do as much as I possibly can because it is still very rewarding. And like I say, the job is so different and varied. You are just doing something different every day. And you don't really know where you're going to end up. Or I'll be home for dinner for that matter.
Jessica, Albie's being a tiny bit modest. These new Rio Tinto Life Flight PC-24s are actually, we've taken 5 and 6 off the global production line, and Albie's the first pilot in Australia to qualify to fly it for aeromedical evacuation work. So it's quite an extraordinary gentleman standing next to me.
Thanks.
He's gone bright red now.
I know, it's my job.
Gone I am very
bright humble. Red now, people. Now, Rebecca, you were named WA Tech Company of the Year, and I think, you know, that might come as a surprise to some people. We've heard a bit about what you've done to get those planes looking very much like any other operating hospital, only smaller. But tell me about how you came to be named that and what would have got you to that position.
Yeah, there's a few raised eyebrows on that one. And I like to remind West Australians that 90 years ago, John Flynn, he had an idea to have aeromedical retrieval work. But that idea actually took 10 years to get off the ground. So like any startup, you know, with that concept, he needed to go and find technology that could deliver it. And most importantly, he needed to find startup capital. And that startup capital actually came off the back of the Jimmy Darcy story. West Australia plays an incredibly important part in the history of the Royal Flying Doctor Service in Australia. And Jimmy Darcy was a stockman out in the Kimberley, and his story of survival captured the hearts and minds of Victorians as the presses all hit the daily newspapers back in the day when there were twice daily stories about how we were trying to help Jimmy Darcy, which actually took more than 12 days from Perth. And just as the doctors arrived, unfortunately, Jimmy Darcy died from some existing preconditions. But what it said was we needed to have a service like this to help people. It shouldn't take 12 days to get medical care. And then Hugh Mackay, when he died, he left a bequest, which are incredibly important to us. And he actually left this bequest, and this is the part I love the most, to John Flynn's aeromedical experiment. So no one actually thought it would work. And 90 years on, we are still innovating. We actually have taken our concept from a doctor in a plane to an emergency room in the skies. The new aircraft will take 3 patients instead of our standard 2. And most importantly, 2 medical teams instead of our usual 1. So it really does lift our capability and our time in responding to patient need.
Got an interesting question from Veronica. Thanks, Veronica. Thanks so much to the Royal Flying Doctors for all you do. I'm wondering, who are the behind-the-scenes people who make sure the planes are properly stocked and cleaned before flights? What sort of turnaround times need? A good question, Veronica. You could come and be a host of something like Focus. Who wants to take that? Albie?
Yeah, I mean, the medical side of things is left to the medical teams to make sure it's stocked with all the drugs, to make sure everything's cleaned and it's all been prepared again and turned around. But again, we have a fantastic engineering team which is right behind to make sure that our aircraft are maintained to a very, very high standard. They do exceptional hours compared to most aircraft out there. So if you have a look at the Rio Tinto jet, for example, we introduced it in January, and it's now already flown nearly 1 million kilometres, and we're only just gone into October. We've carried over 800 patients already, and these aircraft are in the hangar probably nearly every second week. They have got regular maintenance, just like your car. It's got servicing that needs to be done. They do break down as well, then they need to be fixed. So therefore, our engineering teams are always working nearly full-time on our aircraft to keep them airworthy and keep them flying.
And it's fairly similar with the pilots themselves. You're a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year service, so presumably you've got people just on call most of the time?
Yep, we sure do. We've got 50 pilots just in WA, and they're all on a standby arrangement, which cover 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So at all the bases, they all have a roster, and we have a day shift, we have night shifts. So depending on the situation and depending on where the patients need to be retrieved from the quickest base, they'll then be tasked fast, and then they're off to do the job.
My big thanks to Rebecca Tomkinson, Royal Flying Doctor CEO, Chief Pilot Albie Unger, and, of course, Dr. Andrew Hooper, Head of Medical. We heard during the show he is a big fan of Top Gun, likes to pull out the shirt every now and again. And, you know, what can I say? This one's for you, Flyboy.